Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
If you have a podcast and want to monetize it stress-free, you need the Odyssey Creator Lab. We'll host your podcast for free, and our experienced sales team brings in the advertisers and the revenue. Easy. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.
SoCal's Country Station, 95.1 K-Frog. I'm Pepper. This is Spirit of the IE. Get ready to step into a world of twinkling lights, falling snow, and pure holiday magic, because the Nutcracker is back, and it's lighting up stages across the Inland Empire once again. Inland Pacific Ballet's beloved production has become a tradition for so many families in our community, bringing together professional dancers, young performers, and audiences who return year after year to be swept away by Tchaikovsky's classic score. Joining us is Zaylin Cano, Executive Director of Inland Pacific Ballet, to tell us about what goes into creating this enchanting production each year, from the artistry and the dancers to the behind-the-scenes work that makes the Nutcracker such a special part of the holiday season here at home. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having us. We are delighted. We love 95.1 K-Frog, so thanks for having us and promoting the Nutcracker.
We're so happy to do it. How does Inland Pacific Ballet's production of The Nutcracker reflect your company's artistic identity and mission?
Our identity is very eclectic. It comes from local artists right here from the Inland Empire, from many of the cities around. And it takes the fabric of what we've been able over the years to reach out and expose our community through classical dance, but also different dance styles. So, for instance, we have one of UCR's professors of hip hop in our production, Mr. Brandon Jay. And so he brings in that element. And then we have Kelly, who teaches ballet and Pilates at RCC. You know, she's a ballet master and over the years has just reached so many thousands of children and dancers in the Inland Empire. So that's kind of woven in to the fabric of our mission, which is to bring full-length classical ballets to Inland Empire audiences, provide working opportunities to local artists, also to provide professional performing and training opportunities to Inland Empire youth who may want to pursue this as a career someday, or maybe just gain skills for whatever career path comes across their way. And then the fourth fold of the mission, which is our educational outreach, which is to get into the communities and expose all the next new generations to what not only classical ballet is, but what the art form is about, creating live theater on stage for audiences.
Are there any unique staging or choreography choices in your version of the Nutcracker that distinguish it from more traditional productions?
Yes, I would say over the years, it has ebbed and flowed. Like I mentioned, we have a couple little hip hop or pop and lock elements integrated in there. But also over the years, each year we pick kind of a new scene to freshen up or to restage or to recreate the costumes or sets. So for instance, this year, all the Spanish costumes just got redone. Another unique element of our show is our dragon. It takes up the whole 60-foot stage at Bridges. And then another new element this year that's kind of a little not traditional is we've implemented some rifle color guard twirling into the battle scene this year. So that's a brand new element that's a little different that, you know, you might not see at a more traditional Nutcracker.
How do you balance staying true to Tchaikovsky's score and the classical roots of the Nutcracker while also making it feel fresh or relevant for modern audiences?
Yeah, this is a very fine line because, you know, you have the purist tradition. And then in my role, you know, I stepped in following the footsteps of Victoria Koenig and Kevin Myers, who left such this foundation. And I wanted to stay true to their vision and to what they spent years cultivating our Nutcracker to be. But at the same time, you know, you have to engage the audience of today. So I think we've done a really good job at blending, you know, what audiences have come, like some of the iconic pieces and choreography, staying pure, but then finding moments of fun, like acro flipping in the tray pack dance in Act Two, or, you know, those little moments that can catch maybe more of the modern or alternative movement styles. but still having the pure pas de deux of the sugar plum and the traditional corps de ballet and the snow or the waltz scenes.
Have you introduced or preserved any local touches, whether that is maybe in design or casting or storytelling, that connect the ballet specifically to the Inland Empire?
Well, for one thing that we are all really proud of is pretty much every element has been designed and created right here in the Inland Empire through local artists, designers, welders. I mean, every aspect and element has been pieced together from right here. One of the funny things that all new cast members kind of like to see is our painters have hidden different designs in the drops that the audience can't see from where they're sitting. But up on stage, and when you get up close, there's like these little hidden gems and things that are iconic to not only us, but like some historical references, like the mountains of the IE that are on the drops that no one else would see.
How fun. The Nutcracker is often a community tradition. How important is this ballet for Inland Pacific Ballet's relationship with the IE?
Yes, I think Nutcracker is the most important production for Inland Pacific Ballet specifically to the community. It always amazes me each year when I'm in the lobby at the Nutcracker to hear how many local people had no clue we existed. And I mean, we've been here performing for 30 years and they'll be like, wait, you're not a touring company? You're not from the East Coast or up in Northern California? And I'm like, no, we're based right here in Montclair. And so the Nutcracker being able to touch our community and for them to see what large-scale professional classical ballet and theater is developed and nourished and educated right here is such a special piece of that puzzle. So because Nutcracker is such a beloved story that is relatable to so many different audiences or people who might not normally go to the ballet or be intimidated, it helps bring them in the door. And then we're able to share with them what we're doing right here for our community and for our dancers.
Your Nutcracker casts include young dancers from your academy and local communities. What are the benefits, both artistically and socially, of involving so many young dancers?
Yes. You know, I think this is the other fun thing when we get other professionals in, such as stage managers or crew or production managers, because this is such a large thing. They are amazed by how many students are in our production and how well articulated they are through speech or through their respect with one another. And that just goes to show the process of rehearsals and training that this type of work does for young minds and young bodies. It's really exceptional. Each year we look at everything through a fresh lens and go, how can we make this better, or how can we help nourish these children more? And so this year, one of the things with our cast, our production cast of children, is we've implemented something called the four R's that we've been working with them on each season of this production. Like, we're calling each phase like a season. So there's rituals, respect, relationships, and responsibilities. And how do they cultivate those various aspects for themselves and with each other as a group? So really working on their relationships with one another on stage and off stage, building those ritual practices with how do you set yourself up for rehearsal before you even begin the work? What are the steps before you come out for the audience that you're gonna take? What's your responsibility with making sure you have your shoes, your hair supplies, your rehearsal outfit, your costume pieces that you need, your choreography, your notes, your counts? Like, what are all those responsibilities that you're going to hold yourself accountable so we can make the best show possible together? So I think those things really not only enrich them, but gives them a sense of pride. And they come forward and just amaze us every day with how they work through situations, problem solve. You know, we tell them, errors are going to happen. We're human. You know, we can't be perfect every time. It's how do we make the best choice in that moment and then grow and learn from that together.
I'm speaking with Zaylin Cano, Executive Director of Inland Pacific Ballet. How does involving local youth in the Nutcracker help grow dance education in our region?
Yes, they're like little seeds that sprout up all over. I love it. You know, we have students from different counties, Riverside County, San Bernardino County, LA County, and then all the cities within there. And they are so excited to share what they do because it's a lot of hard, passionate work that goes into putting these shows on and being a part of it. Like, you have to make a lot of sacrifices, you know, birthday parties sometimes or family events or, you know, because the show show falls on the same day. So they want to share this joy. So, you know, in their classroom, they're sharing bits and pieces, and then we send them home with, or their teachers will ask for more information. And so we have various lesson plans that the teacher can integrate into their curriculum, or they'll go to their brother's soccer match or baseball and be talking about ballet or dancing on the sidelines. And they'll be like, what are you doing? I'm preparing for the Nutcracker. So it's like this wonderful web that just keeps growing and reaching different aspects of the community through them. But I think one of the other really exciting things is they encourage their friends and family and schoolmates to come. And so many times people who are like, oh, that's silly, or that doesn't take very much effort, and because ballet has kind of this like connotation, they walk away and they're just like amazed at how athletic it is, how much strength and stamina, yet how much beauty and grace, and how much it's like watching a cinema on stage, but with live people. And I think that helps new people realize what a special art form it is to preserve.
Tell us a story of how audience reactions, especially from younger first-time ballet goers, have helped shape your thinking about the production of The Nutcracker.
I think the first one that comes off my head, and every year I just get surprised now that I'm starting to be in this position for several years, is the young ones who are like, my parents or grandparents first brought me to see The Nutcracker when I was 3 or 4, and now I'm in it. And, you know, this might be when they're like 13 or 12. So you never know what impact something is having on a young mind and what they're seeing or being inspired. And I think that's the awe and the beauty, and why, even though, you know, local nonprofit arts is a very hard thing to produce year after year, but those little stories of the young students that get inspired, or they might say, I saw the costumes on stage and I'm going to go home and design this outfit. And, you know, what creativity they leave the theater with, it's almost endless. And those little stories and seeds, I think, are what give us all the energy to keep pushing forward and trying to keep bringing this to our community each season.
With nearly 100 dancers on stage, including young dancers and professionals, what goes into coordinating rehearsals and costumes and cast assignments across these multiple performances that you do?
Yes, it is no small feat, to say the least. We just started working with our stage manager this past week, and, you know, she had to go to 4 different studios because we were rehearsing 4 things all at the same time, and you have to make sure that no one's rehearsal is overlapping with another role they might be in, because they have to then be in 2 places at once. So the coordination to make it all happen is quite extensive. Plus, because we do have children, you know, you have to be aware of their limits as well. So, you know, having double casts or swing performers, you know, and even the professional dancers, you know, we are all, I keep saying this, but human beings at the end of the day. We get sick, we get injured, we get stuck on the freeway with a car accident, you know. So all of these pieces have to constantly be moving and changing to give the audience the best show at the best time. So one thing that I think is always interesting behind the scenes is one small change can have a domino effect that changes almost the entirety of how that show is going to be performed for that audience or that rehearsal. You know, by just one cast member maybe getting ill, how all the swings and doubles then have to be called in and the show sorted out is really quite a feat. But then on top of that, you have the trucking. And the coordination of the trucking to get all the scenery from, you know, the shop to one theater to the next theater. You have all the wardrobe coordination and the fitting of all the costumes. And then the box office, the front of house, the back of house, the ticketing, the market. I mean, it's an operation.
Inland Pacific Ballet's productions of The Nutcracker take place at Bridges Auditorium in Claremont on Saturday, December 13th and Sunday, December 14th, and then at the Fox Performing Arts Center in Riverside on Saturday, December 20th and Sunday, December 21st. Now, you have some pretty special guest artists coming in. Tell us about them, and how do you decide who to invite to be your guest artists each year?
Yes, we are very lucky in the sense that over the years of cultivation and education of the arts in our community, we've had many Inland Empire youth who've gone on to have professional careers nationally and internationally. And so each kind of season, we try to stay in contact with, we call it our IPB family. You know, once you're a dancer and have done a show or taken a class with us, you're part of the IPB family. And we reach out to see what their schedules might be and if they can be released from their company contracts to make a guest appearance with us. And Mira Nadon, who's a star right now with New York City Ballet Principal. She started right here in our productions at Riverside and at Bridges in Claremont as Clara and many other parts. And, you know, she's now a principal. And so trying to foster that connection for our youth because they know her and she's come in and taught some classes and workshops. So they have that rapport. So she tries to make it a part of her schedule to make sure she can always come out and guest with us to keep that connection alive with the students that are here. And then with our other guest artists around that, you know, we really work on cultivating relationships. So Lori Hernandez, this is her second year with us, and she is wildly famous in our little dance community at the studio on TikTok. And she came and guested with us, just a superb dancer, but also just an amazing human being on the inside and out. And she's made it a part of her effort to come, and she's taught some workshops in our summer intensive program with the students and passing on her craft and expertise and knowledge to them. And so when they start to build and foster those relationships, we try to invite those artists back so we can keep building on that relationship. And then we ask for submissions too. And each year we go through, you know, the submissions, and at the end of the day, there's only so many performances. So we try to accommodate and bring in as many voices as we can with the resources and time that we have.
What are some of the biggest production challenges, like sets and costumes and tech, for the Nutcracker compared to other ballets in your season?
Yes, I was having this conversation in one of our parent cast meetings that we just had, is a lot of classic ballets and even more the neoclassical work nowadays, even on the larger stage platforms, is what we call more concert dance. And so it's just a psych or a scrim lit with lighting, and dancers are in very just leotards and skirts and tight, simplistic costuming. And the Nutcracker, so for those of you that don't know tech very well, any theater that we go into, we use every line set possible and try to beg and borrow and buddy. And I mean, it is a massive show. So from that aspect, just coordinating all of those scenic elements and changes, like the load in and load out process, is very extensive at the theater versus if you just walk in for a concert dance recital or maybe like an academy more simplistic story ballet, you're hanging a couple soft goods and, you know, you can load in a couple of hours. This takes 2 full days of 2 crews tag teaming and out to get the set installed and taken down.
I'm speaking with Zaylin Cano, Executive Director of Inland Pacific Ballet. The Nutcracker has been part of IPB's repertoire for many years. How has your Nutcracker changed since you first joined the organization?
Now I might give away my age. No, but this is actually our 31st season of the Nutcracker, and I performed in the first production of the Nutcracker.
So you've been with this for a while.
I have been, you know, well, and thanks to Vicky and Kevin growing up.
The founders. Artistic directors.
of the company. Growing up in the IE, this gave me a platform. I would have never had this exposure if Inland Pacific Ballet had not existed and had started its process in the 90s to bring classical ballet to our community. But they planted that seed. And here's a funny story. I tell some of the kids this too. My mom used to have to beg me to go to ballet. And I would try to hide my hairpins and my tights because I was like, I just want to do tap and jazz and sing and, you know, to stand still that long. It was really hard for me. And then Victoria Koenig convinced me to do my first Nutcracker. And after that, I was hook, line, and sinker. I went to every ballet class imaginable, possible that they offered that I could take. There's something about the tradition and the consistency and the strive to always go richer with your character or the artistry or have that athleticism training that you're working on. The rotation of ballet is very hard to train. And so there's that kind of goal of trying to get stronger with the technique. So I would say that, I'm going to go back to your question now because I went on a tangent there for a while, but the show has evolved tremendously. It started out with a very simplistic set design and a very simple lighting plot to now full hard good and soft good sets, both hung in the air and on the ground, fully sprung floor with Marley for the dancers to dance on that tours with us, you know, fog and haze and all of these theatrical elements that keep building, as well as a deepness and a richness for the art form that from its inception has only grown from that first seed and keeps growing and evolving every year since 31 years ago that it was planted. There are some elements, though. I was an orphan in the very first production, the first crossover that the orphans do is still the exact same crossover that was done in the 90s. So there's some of those aspects that it's like, this is always going to be a part of this version of the Nutcracker here in the IE.
How do you think the Nutcracker contributes to Inland Pacific Ballet's legacy and growth as a company?
First and foremost, Nutcracker brings a lot of people who normally wouldn't go see a ballet out to see a ballet. And after they've seen it, then they're usually like, oh my gosh, this is fantastic. I would love to see another one. And then that leads them to maybe come and support one of our spring ballets like The Little Mermaid or Cinderella, or we're doing Midsummer Night's Dream this year, because they realize that it's really a great experience for the whole family and a fun night out or a date night. And, you know, so I'd say the Nutcracker plants that first little seed. But it's also our most extensive educational outreach. And this is what's really near and dear to my heart, is through grants and through schools and PTAs and communities, they really try to get school kids to the theater. And one of the hardest obstacles right now is busing, because it's just expensive and securing it. But they really work to try to secure that for all these children who maybe would have never had this experience of going to the theater and seeing a ballet. And there's lead up lessons to that, so they understand what it takes to do some of the movements, you know, and they realize, oh my gosh, this is quite hard. So it engages them where they're not just watching it like a TV show, but they're looking for the different elements of technique or lights or costumes or the story. And so to me, that exposure is help planting the seed for either maybe someday fellow patrons, or maybe someday they'll want to move their bodies and they'll realize that dance is a great and varied way to do that.
Are there past Nutcracker seasons that feel especially pivotal or memorable for you and the company? And if so, why and what were they?
That's a very good question. And if you don't mind, I'll highlight a couple. I think for me, when I first was a young student and I got to the technical ability to be a part of the core in the Snow and the Waltz, and that sense of being a part of such a classic, traditional, hard work was so rewarding. I will never forget that in my body or in my memories. Since I've become executive director, I took over in 2019. And so it was a wild ride. But in 2020, it was this innate desire of the Nutcracker has to continue for all of us in our community. And we, through the wonderful support of the Amundsen Foundation, got some grant money and were able to turn one of our studios into a green screen recording studio. And we taught all the dancers individually on Zoom their choreography. And then we brought them in pod groups of five or six. And then we edited them together and keyed in green screens behind them to produce a Nutcracker. And we did a drive-in at the Fairplex in Pomona with this huge blow-up movie screen and radio. So I mean, that was a very unique experience. And then in 2021, just trying to figure out how to bring it back, and we rehearsed three casts in different pod groups, you know, so they didn't have any crossing with each other, and figuring out how to test everyone and test the audience. And I mean, that was such a pivotal moment of going, how are we going to do this? And how can we do this safely and still keep it going? So I think those were pivotal and unique in their own way. Then I'd say last year, standing in the back of Bridges with an audience of over 2,000 people, hearing them laugh and cheer and interact and get up on their feet in a standing ovation at the end. To me, that was a pivotal moment of going, we made it through. Like, now how are we going to see this through the next 10, 20, 30 years? Like, we made it through COVID. Now, how as a community are we going to make sure that this is here for future generations with all of the rising costs that it takes to do something like this?
You mentioned a memorable year for you was the year that you first stepped into corps de ballet roles. Talk about those milestones for the dancers as they progress their way through the different roles of the Nutcracker.
I'm glad you brought this up, because this does become a thing. So when you're about six or seven, you are eligible to audition for the Nutcracker. And those first roles are in the candy scene, Mother Ginger, and there's bonbons and gingerbreads and candy canes. And that's kind of the little stepping stones of the first roles. Then the next big moment is when you're eligible to be a part of the party scene. And that's the, you know, party girls and orphans, party boys. Then the next progression from there is the battle scene with the soldiers and the mice and the battle dolls. And then kind of the dancer's big pivot is when pointe shoes are first introduced. And, you know, it takes many years of training to even be eligible for pointe shoes. Then you go through something called the pre-pointe classwork, which is on flat demi-pointe. Then pre-pointe with these pre-pointe shoes. Then you get your pointe shoes. And so kind of those first pointe roles are battle dolls and angels. So that's a big stepping stone for the dancer. Once they've gotten there, it's like they feel they've really accomplished something. And then making your way up corps de ballet wise, the really hard core work is, you know, snow and waltz. And then there's like the turning component of Spanish. You've got to be able to do multiple turns on pointe. And then there's pas de deux. And then they're like, so they incrementally kind of build, and dancers look forward to achieving those milestones each year.
And you have witnessed that both as a dancer who went through all of the progression, but then you also see it in the dancers who you coach. Is there a particular dancer who you look and see doing like Sugar Plum Fairy and you're like, I remember her as a bonbon?
Yes, actually. And, you know, now you see them when they come in maybe to the academy when they're three or four. Of course, kids go through different phases and, you know, they're hook, line, and sinker dance. And then the next thing they want to do soccer, and then they want to do cooking class, and then they might come back. And, you know, when you see that 3 or 4 year old who's worked their way up and is now graduating from high school and in soloist roles, it is so rewarding to see just their maturity and their growth and their capabilities and how they've tackled things that at times they thought they couldn't tackle, and they persevered and pushed through, and you see them overcome those barriers. And that's what it's all about.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. TNCs apply. In app only.
Make money from your podcast with the Odyssey Creator Lab. You create the show. We bring the advertisers. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com.
Speaking with Zaylin Cano, Executive Director of Inland Pacific Ballet. How do ticket pricing, venue selection, and performance times reflect your desire to make the Nutcracker accessible to a broad cross-section of the IE?
Yes, a very good question indeed. And, you know, if we have any listeners with donors or wanting to get involved to help us make it more affordable, more reachable, please reach out. We need all the help and support we can get. But this is something that's very crucial on our mind. And I think that's why the educational outreach is a really good way to get kids in the door, because the prices of these productions have just continued to rise. Every aspect has been affected, from the labor costs and demands, insurance demands, rising theater costs, costume fabric has gone up substantially, lumber has gone up substantially. So there's just all of these added costs. And so every year we look at that, and we want to make it accessible. And at the same time, we want to make sure that we're around another year. So it's always a tight dance. But we try to have opportunities available that make it more accessible. This season, we've been able to go and do some performances in the malls and in Village Venture. We've also developed a new program that lets us go into schools, or we go into senior citizen or retirement community homes and do small intermittent performances, because maybe they can't even leave their facility, or, you know, there's some special situations with kids. It's harder for them, sensory issues or physical limitations that make it so they can't get to the theater. So we've been trying to bring it to them to make it more accessible, and also working with local organizations. United Way is one of those. I think it's the VA, the Veterans of America. We try to do special opportunities for them to allow them to come in and see the show as well.
How do you market the Nutcracker to re-engage longtime ballet patrons versus attract new audiences?
So I think that's kind of like the fun balance of how we each year freshen up a new section. So someone who's seen our shows for quite a while, they'll look and they'll see, oh, they added in this element this year. So this year it's, you know, the color guard twirling and the new mice choreo and the Spanish costumes and the new Christmas tree. They'll come and they'll look specifically for those new elements, or, you know, they might follow along with what Pas de Deux were doing. So this year we worked with the Balanchine Foundation and got the rights or the royalties to perform the original Balanchine Pas when Mira and Peter are here. Mm-hmm. So some of those things I think are interesting to the longtime supporters, but then realizing the story and the fun and the play to draw in new audience members. So, you know, Fritz, the naughty little brother who, you know, messes up the party for Clara, or the battle scene between the Mouse King and the Nutcracker, and the livelihood of the Act Two diverse attestments with, you know, Tchaikovsky's music that ranges in dynamics and themes, and it's so recognizable. Trying to play on those more colorful aspects for the newer audience members.
Given the scale of the Nutcracker production, how critical is it for Inland Pacific Ballet's annual budget? Is it a major revenue driver, or is it more of a mission-centered show?
So I would say both. It's interesting. A good Nutcracker season really reflects what we're able to offer the next season. If it is a harder Nutcracker season, not as many patrons come out, or, you know, just various factors, then that really directly affects what we can offer the next season in terms of our spring ballet and our fall show. But at the same time, our mission is to produce the most authentic traditional classical ballet and educate our Inland Empire audiences. And as long as we can do that and just break even, we've done our job.
As it is for a lot of nonprofits, securing funding is a chore. What are some ways you accomplish that?
Yes, we have a brilliant grant writer, and we have a brilliant new marketing team that's on board that I'm hoping, you know, will help secure us for the next years to come. But it's a yearly, you never know what funding might be cut or what funding might become available. So it's always kind of living moment to moment, which is scary, you know, but it's also, you know, it's the hard work. Our whole team has worked so many years at this, figuring out how to do it with what we're given in the moment to do that. We make the best work with what we can. And if we are able to secure additional funding, that goes directly back into the show and to the dancers, either preserving or facelifting. Like right now, we're in a real need of redoing our soft goods for Nutcracker. So that's kind of like an item that we're striving to either get funding for, or grants or donors to help us, because that's what needs to be refreshed next. And if, you know, we don't secure the funding, or one piece, you know, we do one piece at a time, or, you know, we facelift as best we can to keep it going for another year.
What role do ticket sales and donations and community partnerships play in sustaining a large scale production like this?
100% of all of those aspects. We rely heavily on ticket sales. So, you know, people are always like, what can we do? You know, if, you know, come and see the show. If you come and see the show and tell a friend and tell a friend's friend, that is one way you can really volunteer and already be an advocate for the arts and keeping the arts alive in our community. If you can go above and beyond that, and this is our big mission this year, is to grow our local donors. We need to grow our donor base and our sponsors. You know, we have this vision to be like a local company, you know, that's one in like Boston or Houston Ballet or PNB. But we need a lot of donor support. And whether that is $50, whether that's $5, whether that's $1 million, you know, every little bit really helps and contributes directly to making this possible for our community.
I'm speaking with Zaylin Cano, Executive Director of Inland Pacific Ballet, who is bringing the Nutcracker to Bridges Auditorium in Claremont on Saturday, December 13th and Sunday, December 14th, and the Fox Performing Arts Center in Riverside on Saturday, December 20th and Sunday, December 21st. How diverse is your Nutcracker cast in terms of dancers' backgrounds, ages, and experience levels?
Vast, very vast. I would say our dancers come from so many different cultural backgrounds, you know, and contribute in so many different ways. That way we talk through storylines through different perspectives and different articulations. But then, you know, just the ages, you know, we start at age 7 and, you know, the kids go through 18. But then there's our principal dancers and our principal character artists, you know, and so the age really can go up to 70s. So that is really fun because you get the wisdom, but then you still get the youthful innocence, like through, you know, the joy and excitement. And then levels, you know, I mean, a younger performer or, you know, even we have some of our adult students who are part of the party scene who take, you know, our adult ballet classes and we integrate them that way. So, I mean, the range and level of ability or years that they've been studying also varies quite dramatically from a couple years to decades.
In past seasons, you've highlighted dancers from various communities. How important is representation to you in this production?
It's very important. And actually, we've been, with our previous talk too, with resources, trying to keep on developing particularly those Act Two diverse assessments from a different authentic and cultural lens. And the more resources that are available, we're able to hire in professionals within those different modalities to really bring the richness of that culture and redesign the costumes and the choreography to make it a more authentic experience for the audience and for the performers on stage.
Have you made any deliberate efforts to make ballet and the Nutcracker more inclusive or culturally resonant in the IE?
So I think, you know, and it's funny because we got a little bit of criticism for it, but at the same time, we got a lot of positive remarks. But there's some elements that we've made it more modern through like body language or miming with like Fritz and Drosselmeyer and, you know, put kind of some of that hip hop culture in there. And, you know, for the purists, it's like, what are you doing? You know, and for the average audience, you're like, we really liked that part, you know, that you put that in. I thought that was cool. Or it made it funny and more engaging with the more serious moments. So I think it's always that blend of trying to figure out for us as an organization and for our dancers and families, it's like, this is our tone. We want to have a professional, fun time through the Nutcracker. So trying to figure out how to incorporate all the different views and voices together to make the most representative of our area show through this medium is kind of the challenge and the fun.
Now, I feel like you are primarily a ballerina, but you actually have a background that is more diverse than a lot of other dancers. How has that background influenced where you are as executive director and where you see the future of Inland Pacific Ballet going?
Yes, that's a good question. Yes, I have a lot of classical training, but I also was privileged enough to go and train with Ballet Rambert in London and dance over there and really learn this whole contemporary, neoclassical, modern vocabulary of movement. And growing up also in the Inland Empire, I had a lot of exposure to tap. And this was back when the Edge Dance Studio was still open in Hollywood. And they had all these fantastic rhythm tappers and traditional tappers. And my dad would drive me down there late at night. We'd get home late for school the next day because I was just like, I have to take these tap classes. And then, you know, Fosse, they had these authentic, great Fosse workshops in downtown LA too. So I think all of that kind of web, and I had a career in musical theater, you know, too. So all of those various aspects, I think, come together. And with our team, with those various backgrounds together, we can really make a very interesting, captivating show because you're drawing on the acting of musical theater. You're drawing on the rhythm of tap, whether it's in classical ballet or a contemporary movement, there's always a rhythm to the music. You're drawing on the hitting and the hip articulation and the isolations from jazz, you know, to hit a specific moment, even if it's in ballet. You're have the groundedness of hip hop. So I think having that experience contributes to the show. Now, what we've been doing, and we're about to do it here again in March, is fusing together ballet and musical theater to create our ballet musical. And so we're partnering up again with Lewis Family Playhouse and Candlelight Pavilion in March to bring Mary Poppins and Mary Poppins Jr., the ballet musical. But then you can include real authentic ballet pas de deux with our company dancers. And you can use all of these modalities in one. So we're trying to blend that as well as offering more of the traditional classical ballets.
Are there any plans to evolve or refresh the Nutcracker in future seasons, whether that means new choreography or set redesigns or reinterpretations?
Yes. As mentioned, we need all new soft goods. You know, so we did the Christmas tree last year. We still need a new dragon. Our dragon master, Ken, he has new choreography ideas that he wants to do. So we're hoping to revitalize that scene next year in 2026. So yes, we're always trying to preserve. And then this year we worked on the battle scene again, incorporating some pas de deux with the captains that have these rifle color guard utensils, props to twirl. So there's always a vision of what can we tweak to make even better this season. Or costumes, we always need to revitalize the costumes as well, because they'll last about 20 to 25 years. But then, you know, there's always repairs or new netting on the skirts from season to season. So each season we look and we go, okay, where's the need? What resources do we have? And we kind of go down our list, but our list is always longer than the resources we have.
How do you see the Nutcracker helping shape the future of Inland Pacific Ballet, both artistically and in terms of community engagement?
Inland Pacific Ballet started with the Nutcracker, and that remains the forefront of how we reach our audiences and the new generation of dancers. And each season we approach, and that's the one standing that must always happen. No matter what, we will figure out how to put on the Nutcracker. There's the sense of the holiday family tradition just from everyone going. There's the sense as a dancer. You were a dancer too, touched by Nutcracker. You know, you just hear the music and it brings you right back there. And it's like there can't be a year without the Nutcracker when you've grown up with it. So I think it will continue to be that accessibility for new audiences. It will continue to be the passion and the drive for artists who've been touched by it. And it will continue to hopefully be that treasured family holiday experience where the grandparents, the parents, the uncles, the nieces, the nephews, any age and stage in life has that moment to come together as a family and be transported away to the land of the sweets for an evening of laughter and fun together.
What do you hope audience members take away from seeing your Nutcracker, especially those who might not be traditional ballet goers?
I hope, first and foremost, that they are entertained for the evening and they walk away with a smile and a warm heart. I hope that they are just mesmerized by the talent and athleticism of all the performers on stage, young to seasoned professionals. And I hope that they walk away going, I want to go back to see another performance by Inland Pacific Ballet or by any theater company to help keep the arts alive here for us.
What does the Nutcracker personally mean to you as executive director?
It was the first and foremost formative part of my career, of my classical career. It was one of the first shows I saw. My dad took me to see a Nutcracker when I was 5 years old. I have seen many versions around the world. And every year when that music turns on, it's like my body just takes over and knows the choreography and never leaves your body. My true heart, whether or not it's me as executive director or not, is that Nutcracker Inland Empire will continue to be here for future generations beyond what I can even see, because what it has to do to transform not only the lives of the kids on stage, but for audience members who come and see it, is something that I really hope is always here for future generations.
Do you have a favorite moment or memory from any past Inland Pacific Ballet Nutcracker productions?
Well, a funny one. Right after I had given birth to my second child, and I had him in the stroller in what we call the green room and was trying to get, you know, cast members on and off stage, someone turns around to me and is like, we lost the Nutcracker sword. We can't find the Nutcracker sword. And everyone's in a panic because he's about to enter. It's like, you know, down to the wire. And my three-year-old looks at me and goes, Mom, it's over there. And it was underneath a white tutu. He goes and picks it up and just hands it on. And the Nutcracker like flies out on stage. We're all looking at each other with our mouths open. And I was like, and that's why we teach awareness. But I think that's a funny one. There's so many funny moments that happen that the audience would never know. And I think those are some of the fun ones.
There's a whole other show happening off stage.
A whole other show backstage. Yep, that's for sure.
As a leader, how do you support your dancers, both young and professional, emotionally and artistically during the demanding Nutcracker season. Because, let's be honest, when you're involved in theater, emotions can run high.
Oh, yes. And I think also, you know, having lived it myself for so many years, I'm very sensitive to that. And like when you know, or you have to deliver maybe a hard casting decision or something, you know how that person might feel emotionally because you've been in those shoes, you know, personally. So constantly striving for figuring out how to articulate maybe harder messages, you know, in a sensitive manner or with discretion. And then I think just like, you know, tech week for any person that's in theater, you're drained because most of us are doing other jobs or, you know, for the kids, they're also going to school on top of tech week. And, you know, you have longer days and nights and then you're performing and it's very exhausting. And so to have those moments where you stop and you breathe and you remember the bigger picture, and that's why we're going back to the tone of fun, but professional fun, you know, not chaotic fun, to remember why we're doing it and that some of those little things that might be bugging us, it's probably because we're tired and we need to eat. And that when the show and the audience come in, it's all for that and it's going to make us stronger. And so I think talking through younger performers or performers who have not had the chance to perform as much, remembering to take them on that new journey each time and not just take for granted that we all know it and have done it 1,000 times. It's always a good fresh reminder to go, how are we going to take this new cast on this journey? Because even the seasoned professionals are going to have different experiences and different needs from performance to performance. And being sensitive to that fact and not just assuming we've done this before, it's going to be the same way.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Make money from your podcast with the Odyssey Creator Lab. You create the show, we bring the advertisers. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com.
I've been speaking with Zaylin Cano, Executive Director of Inland Pacific Ballet. They are bringing their production of The Nutcracker to Bridges Auditorium in Claremont on Saturday, December 13th and Sunday, December 14th, and the Fox Performing Arts Center in Riverside on Saturday, December 20th and Sunday, December 21st. What's the best way to get tickets?
The best way to get tickets. Go to ipballet.org, and from there, it will take you to the various theaters' websites. It'll also show you ticketing opportunities for Mary Poppins, the musical, or Midsummer Night's Dream, the ballet as well. But that's also a way that you can see some of the needs of the company or some of the very exciting, fun things that we're doing and engage with us that way.
And any last thoughts for us?
Oh my gosh, you do not want to miss it. Come out, you will be mesmerized. If you're hesitant and have always gone, I wonder what it would be like. Come, take the risk, take that special someone on a date. Just go out for a single night out and see a good show. Bring the whole family. Mission in with the lights after the show is just spectacular. Going into Bridges Auditorium gives you this huge European opera house feel. I mean, there's an experience beyond just the show itself. And we hope to see you there.
There is an expression that dancers say to each other before they go on stage. Even though it's in a different language, I'm not allowed to use that particular word on the radio. So I won't be doing that. But please know that the sentiment is there. And I hope that this is a beautiful Nutcracker season.
Thank you. We'll break a leg.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
If you have a podcast and want to monetize it, stress-free, you need the Odyssey Creator Lab. We'll host your podcast for free, and our experienced sales team brings in the advertisers and the revenue. Easy. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.